Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. And you know, there are a number of tick species that we can find here in the state, and identifying them isn't always as easy as you might think. And we'll talk about that today with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk, back with us once again, clinical instructor at the UW-Madison School of Veterinary Medicine. So we'll talk about how to get ticks identified, actually for free. You can get that done. We'll also take a look at some bacteria that thrive and can create problems for you or your pets. So we'll get to all of that. But first, I'm joined by Gene Purcell, our new director of Wisconsin Public Media. Gene, great to see you. Thanks for joining us.
Well, it's great to be here in my new role, and it's great to be back here at Wisconsin Public Radio as part of the fall membership drive. Larry and I are here for just the next few minutes to talk about listener support and why that's important. And I can tell you why it's important. It's because listener support is the single largest source of funding for all of the programs you hear here on Wisconsin Public Radio. So that's why it's your gift of any amount right now that makes a very critical difference in our funding program at WPR.org, or you can call us at 888-202-2552.
And last hour, we heard from 17 people, so we've got 17 more pledges. Thank you so much for those pledges. But right now, we have a really good deal going here. We have a dollar-for-dollar match of up to $4,500, and it's obviously a very generous match. It's from Chuck and Claire Jackson of Handy Art in Milton, Wisconsin, and you know what it means? It means they're going to match every dollar you give.
Up to $4,500. That is what I call incentive.
Yeah.
So if you've been on the fence, do I give, do I not give, should I do it now, should I do it later, you should do it now and take advantage of this dollar-for-dollar match. It's Chuck and Claire Jackson's way of encouraging you to join them in supporting Wisconsin Public Radio so you can double your support for the programs you love by giving now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
You are very powerful because people who listen, you provide the most significant share of funding for WPR programs. Your donation, it's really an investment in Wisconsin Public Radio and in the programs that deliver the greatest value to you.
Absolutely. And it's your contribution. This all ties together. You get value, and it's your support that makes it possible. You help keep independent public service radio on the air here in Wisconsin for you and for the entire state. So give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I started listening to Wisconsin Public Radio when I was a kid. My parents used to listen to Wisconsin Public Radio, and so I got to listen when I was, 6, 7 years old. Mm-hmm. I remember listening to it. And, you know, as you're sitting there listening to me jabber on, maybe you can think about when you first discovered Wisconsin Public Radio. Maybe a friend recommended the great music or the news or the interesting talks, the weekend programs, or maybe you were just sort of scanning around the dial and that's how you found WPR. But now you're hooked.
Absolutely. And, you know, my story is very similar to yours. My parents used to listen to what were called the state stations way back then. We listened in school, and over time, I have become a dedicated Wisconsin Public Radio listener. And whether it's been years or just a few months since you found us, it's your contribution of, say, $10 a month, $120 a year, that supports the quality programming that you valued since the first time you listened. So be a part of making WPR possible. Give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
This fall membership drive, we have a new gift to help you embrace the season. It's a WPR logo crewneck sweatshirt. It's heathered gray and printed right here in Wisconsin.
Oh gosh, I love the smell of fall more than anything. I love the smell of the leaves and the ground, and the sky is so blue and the air is so fresh.
I love that it's everybody's favorite season, and so I can feel like I'm part of something bigger. Also, decorative gourds.
Wisconsin has the best fall colors.
The WPR sweatshirt is just one more thing to love about fall. Ask for yours when you give $20 a month or make a one-time gift of $240. Here's how.
Just go to WPR.org or phone 888 888- 202-252-2552 to make your pledge. Larry Mueller here with Gene Purcell, asking for your support during our fall membership drive because it's what makes the WPR programs you rely on possible. So your gift, $10 or $20 a month, whatever amount you choose, it's the right amount, and it'll be doubled. During this time period.
Don't forget about that matching grant that we've got this hour. $4,500 in matching funding available to you that doubles your impact to Wisconsin Public Radio. So giving to Wisconsin Public Radio is easy to do. It takes just a few minutes. All we need is a few pieces of information. We'll need your name, your contact information, how much you'd like to give, and then how you'd like to pay.
And tell you what, our dollar-for-dollar match is still in effect. Mm-hmm. And as Gene said, it's quick and easy to do. And, of course, your gift right now really, really helps. So the next few minutes to support the station you count on, do it right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552 and make your contribution. Well, you are listening to Dr. Sandy Sawchuk. Hi, Sandy. How are you?
Hi, Larry. I'm just fine.
Well, I tell you what, we've got lots we can talk about. And I know we wanted to talk about ticks for a minute or two, for sure, before we take calls.
Yeah, we're heading into tick season right now. I think a lot of people get the idea that, like, bugs are a summertime thing. But I like to tell my students and owners that we have ticks year-round here, especially the deer ticks really like the cooler weather. So you don't need 365 days of tick control, but you do need 12 months. And so if you do happen to use or have a lapse in your flea and tick control or a failure and you find a tick on your pet, the National Center for Veterinary Parasitology, which is actually located at Oklahoma State University, is now asking you to send any ticks that you remove from your pets in. And this can either be done, like they're targeting veterinarians, but owners can do this as well. And they have a website called showusyourticks.org. And they'd like to look at these ticks to try to determine for dogs and cats across the country kind of what species are in different areas. And we're trying to map and just see what we have here because, like, we're starting to see the Lone Star tick up in this area. And in fact, I had one on myself a couple of years ago. So this would be something that is helpful for not only parasitologists, but also for veterinarians and pet owners, because besides identifying the type of tick, they will also send you information on the diseases that that particular species of tick is known to transmit. So you kind of know what to be testing for or looking for with your pets as well. And that's the first stage of the study. The second phase is they're actually going to start taking DNA from some of these selected ticks and start screening for other pathogens, because there's a whole host of tick-borne diseases that we don't know anything about, and we're seeing new ones. You know, every year we find new tick-borne diseases affecting not only our pets, but people as well.
And I remember people calling this show, I think, and saying, you know, I had the dog out and I came back and there were 10 ticks on the dog. Do you send in all the 10 ticks?
Yes, you can send them all in and they will identify them for you. The hard part about identifying ticks, at least for me, and I've even gone to something called parasitology camp, where I spent a week just working with ticks and things. And it was a very fun summer camp, but for veterinarians and people, nerds like me. But it can be really difficult to identify some of the larval stages of ticks, because they don't look the same as the adults. And so it's difficult for even a veterinarian to be able to tell what some of these ticks are, an owner would have just as much trouble. So this is, I think, would be very helpful just to provide not only the United States with more information, but also your individual pet.
And so how do you send them in?
If you just go to their website, showusyourticks.com. with an S, .org. And they have a form that you can download, and they just want the tick sent in a little container. You can use an old pill vial or a plastic vial from your vet clinic, or just anything that can contain the tick. They don't want it to get squished in the mail.
Okay. Well, we have a caller online. By the way, you can join in too at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Lee in Green Bay has something for us. Hi, Lee.
Hi there. Good morning to you both. I just had my male cat at the vet yesterday. He was a stray I took in. He's roughly a little over 2 years old. We don't know for sure. I've had him about a year, tamed him down. He's a house cat now. Had him neutered. Had a blood test done yesterday at the vet, kind of like a little physical. And we found out that he has that FIV. I think that's a virus.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just wondering what I can do, to help him. He's fine now. There's no problems, but I know they get infections easier. And what can I do to kind of prolong his life and help him out?
Yeah, this is a disease that, depending on what part of the country you live in, can affect anywhere from about 2 to 4.5% of the cats in the population. And it's one of these diseases that is kind of like HIV, but it's called FIV, feline immunodeficiency virus. And many cats that do get exposed can live a very long, normal life. And the big things that you're going to want to do is make sure that your cat is kept indoors, away from other cats, because it is one of these ones where he could potentially live with another cat in a household. It's not spread just through passive contact. It's usually through fighting. And so many of the cats that we do see with it are street cats like your cat was, that probably got into a fight with somebody and had the virus transmitted through the cat bite. And so that's usually how we'll see it transmitted. But by keeping your cat indoors, keeping him on a good plane of nutrition, not letting him develop dental disease, which can be worse for these cats. So something as simple as periodontal disease that, we don't like to see cats live with, but many cats do, can become very problematic for a cat that has a suppressed immune system. So keeping him as healthy as you can, and if you do start seeing anything coming up that has you concerned, any weight loss, open sores, anything, then obviously get your kitty into the vet for immediate treatment. But I can see these cats living into their teens with appropriate care from the owner. So it's not necessarily a death sentence.
Yeah, very good. Thanks for calling, Lee. Let's go to Craig in Ladysmith next. Hi, Craig.
Hi, I wanted to ask, I have a 8-year-old beagle, and he had Lyme disease as a puppy. And I get him the Lyme disease vaccine and I also give him the drugs. Is that necessary?
This is something that just because he's been exposed to the Lyme organism, and remember about 90% of dogs that get exposed to the Lyme organism that from a tick bite don't show any symptoms of disease. About 10% do. And it's just the reverse for people. So people get very frightened when their dog is diagnosed with having a positive Lyme test. They will often test positive for many, many years after exposure. But past exposure does not provide future protection from the disease. So it's very different than, let's say, you getting exposed to the chickenpox and then having, immunity throughout your life to that particular virus. This is something that having your dog on flea and tick control, and if you're in a heavy tick area, obviously vaccinating with your veterinarian's guidance would be important for your dog. So keep up doing that. It sounds like you're doing all the right things for your dog, because we don't want your dog to get reinfected.
Yep, there you go. Thanks, Greg. Randy in Kakana, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. See, we have a mature female cat. Still very active, 15, 16 years old. But over the last 4 or 5 months, she's kind of taken to howling, as almost as if she's in pain. But she doesn't ever do it in front of us. It's always down the hall or in a different room. And we've tried a calming collar, and we've also tried some behavioral health supplements. But nothing seems to be working. Any ideas?
a couple of things come to mind. One of the things I'd be recommending is having your cat go in for a physical exam, and potentially your veterinarian's going to be finding out that your cat may be hyperthyroid. One of the most common reasons why we see cats become really vocal and having behavior changes is having a thyroid goiter that is producing excessive thyroid hormone. And that's a very common complaint from the owner is, they're just more vocal than ever. But other things that come to mind too, especially the way you've described it, that she's down a hallway away from you, is we know that senior cats can become, have dementia. And they estimate that about, I think it was 60% of cats that are about 16 and over have some form of dementia. And so they get lost. They wander into a room and, where am I? I don't see anybody. Maybe her hearing is impaired and she's not orienting to where you are in the household with normal household sounds as well. So those would be the big things. Dementia, mm-hmm. deafness, and hyperthyroidism. The hyperthyroidism you can definitely do something about. So get your kitty in to get checked.
And thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Dr. Sandy Sawchuk, our guest from the University of Wisconsin-Madison School of Veterinary Medicine. Great to have her with us today, and great to have back Jean Purcell, Director of Wisconsin Public Media, to talk with you and with me about Wisconsin Public Radio's fall membership drive. You count on the Ideas Network for interesting conversations, and we count on you to help keep these discussions on the air.
And you know what? That's absolutely true. And this hour, we've got a dollar-for-dollar match to help you make that decision to support Wisconsin Public Radio. And it's really, really important that we hear from you, because listener support is the biggest piece of funding that makes this show and everything else that you listen to on Wisconsin Public Radio possible. That's why it's your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. That's so important.
And as Gene said, we have a dollar-for-dollar match up to $4,500 in effect right now. And I want to mention again, it's folks who donated, Chuck and Claire Jackson of Handy Art in Milton, are going to double every dollar you give up to $4,500. And it's their way of inspiring you to support WPR. So you can double the impact of your pledge right now. I saw someone earlier donating $200. Well, that turned into $400 for that particular person. Just go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
Yeah, that's a very, very generous challenge grant, and we really appreciate it. So take advantage of that dollar-for-dollar match. And when you do, you're helping to support everything that you hear here on the Ideas Network. The Ideas Network is terrific. There's really nothing else like it in the entire country. We keep you informed and entertained every single day. Of course, you enjoy Larry Mueller every day, but you also enjoy Science Friday, Zorba Pastor on Your Health, and many of the other programs that you've come to rely on.
Absolutely. WPR gives you a window on the world like no other. It's a wonderful place to come to and listen and learn and have fun. So I hope you'll support the exciting mix of shows you enjoy on the Ideas Network. Just give right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And if you've never made a pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio before, let me tell you that it's a quick and it's an easy process. And as a sustaining member myself, and I am a sustaining member, and let me tell you, that is the way to go. You really simplify your donation. You don't have to worry about reminders anymore. You don't have to worry about whether your membership has expired. You'll wind up making automatic monthly payments from your bank account or your credit card.
And your membership is always current. So pick an amount that works for you, $10 a month, maybe $20 a month, and you can become a sustainer right now at WPR.org or by phoning 888-202-2552.
Picture yourself perusing the shelves of your favorite bookstore with $200 extra dollars to spend. That could be you. You'll have 5 chances to win a gift card to a bookstore near you.
My partner loves books so much, and he would just have a field day.
$200 at a bookstore. A really nice Kindle case. That's the one that, don't tell Steve Paulson I said that. He'd be really upset.
Oh, that's such a hard question. I love books. I would probably just spend hours thinking about it. I'd be there for so long.
Sustainers, you're automatically entered. Find all the rules and details at WPR.org/drawing. Donate any amount right now to be entered. And here's how.
Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 to make your donation in support of the programs you count on. Larry Mueller here with Gene Purcell, asking for you to help us raise the money that keeps Wisconsin Public Radio and all the programs you enjoy on the air. And I don't care if your gift is $10 a month or if it's $20 or maybe it's $100 a month. We really appreciate and count on your gift.
Indeed, we do. And when you're making your gift, it's always good to kind of put things in context a little bit. Think about what you spend money on every single day. Maybe it's that cup of coffee or a couple cups of coffee. Maybe it's lunch out. It all adds up over the course of a day, a week, and a month. So it's easy to spend the kind of money on something that's already part of your daily routine.
And I want you to know that our dollar for dollar match is still in effect. You know, we've raised $840.
Wow.
So there's still a long way to go. And you can still get in there with your $100 or $200 contribution. It'll turn into $200 or $400. So I hope you'll give right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552 and support the programs that you've come to enjoy, and your donation is going to go twice as far, believe me. We are taking a look at your pet's health today with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk, clinical instructor at the UW-Madison School of Veterinary Medicine. Our lines are all filled. The number is 800-642-1234, but let's go to Vicki in Dodgeville next. Vicki, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Yes, I have a blue tick coonhound. He was diagnosed about 3 years ago with coonhound paralysis. And he recovered, but he has a front leg and the opposite back leg that's kind of paralyzed, not completely, but he has trouble getting around. But then I put the front line on his back for fleas and ticks, and I thought it was the coonhound paralysis, but he started having seizures. I haven't put any more on him, but now I'm kind of wondering if it was to do with the front line when they diagnosed him with the coonhound paralysis.
Mm. Yeah, well, coonhound paralysis is one of these fairly uncommon things that we see in our dogs. There's a human variety of it as well. It's called Guillain-Barré syndrome. And what it is it's a inflammation of the nerves that leave the spinal cord that are involved with the ability to move. So it's given the official name of a polyradiculoneuritis. And so these animals can still feel everything. And when people get it, they still feel everything. In fact, my sister, when she was 4 years old, got it and ended up in the hospital. And it's usually starts in the back legs and progresses forward and then goes in reverse and they get back to being completely normal again. So I really question the diagnosis if your dog has some residual problems with different limbs. I mean, it's there may be more than one thing going on. But in humans, it's usually due to some form of virus that you get exposed to, and it triggers this immune-related problem with the nervous system. And in dogs, it appears to be due to ticks. And I, you know, so we typically will see it with dogs that get exposed to ticks. We'll often find a tick on them. Removing the tick will often make them get better a little bit faster. Sometimes the tick is already long gone by the time they've been brought to the vet clinic to be looked at. And it's a diagnosis by, you know, doing a full neurologic exam. But seizures are not part of this syndrome either. So I'm concerned that there is something else going on with your dog's nervous system to trigger not only the limb abnormalities, but also the seizures. Frontline is not absorbed systemically. It is a topical drug, but there are some topical medications that can be absorbed systemically, and if you overdose them, can cause seizures and other neurologic type problems. And it's usually the medications that contain an ingredient called a permethrin, and that's not in frontline. So would be really questioning, is it the flea and tick medication that you're using? But because your dog potentially had this coonhound paralysis type problem, and it can happen in dogs other than coonhounds as well, it just happens to be more common. We see it, and we've diagnosed it more often in coonhounds, and it may just be that they're out in the woods more and getting exposed to ticks more frequently. I think you really need to continue on with using some type of safe flea and tick prevention, and that would be something to discuss with your veterinarian to know what would be the safest thing. And one of the things that we'll be talking, and I see I've got a couple of calls coming up here shortly, is regarding the FDA report using on the oral flea and tick preparations. And with your dog having some type of seizure disorder, I would not be recommending that your dog be on one of the oral flea and tick preparations. So, but we'll get into that a little bit later.
All right, there we go. And let's go to Brad in Whitewater. Brad, hi, thanks for calling.
Hey. Hi, thank you. I have a 4-year-old golden retriever, and early in the summer, she had got diagnosed with Lyme's disease. So the vet recommended to switch from frontline to NexGard because she's outside pretty much all day, every day. And now she has recently had 2 seizures in the past 4 weeks, and she's been on the NexGard for about 4 months. And I had seen that FDA notification about the NexGard.
Mm-hmm.
So I was wondering if I stop giving it to her, which I'm going to, if the effects will be, if they will go away, or if there's permanent damage to her neurological.
Sure. Yeah, well, it doesn't appear that the seizures that dogs have as a result of being on the medication are permanent. The FDA did extensive studies and looking into these drugs before they were put on the market, and there's 4 of them on the market right now, and they've been on the market for several years now. And I use them in my own dogs, and I feel very comfortable using it. But I think it is something that discussing with anybody that has a pet that needs to be on flea and tick control, which every dog and cat that is indoor, outdoor needs to be on some type of flea and tick control if you're living in Wisconsin. Question your veterinarian about the safety of using this particular class of drugs. And I'm going to butcher the name. It's isoxazolines. And I have a hard time saying that. But that would not only include NexGard, but Simparica, Brevecto, and a new one that's out on the market called Credelio. And so anytime a drug is on the market, the FDA is always accepting and monitoring any reports regarding adverse drug reactions. And so with having it on the market for some time now, there have been some, although it's still very rare, reports of either muscle tremors, ataxia, where the dog walks around a little drunken, and seizures. And this is not only in dogs, but in cats, because Brevecto is labeled for cat use as a topical product. And so it has been seen in cats as well. And so the new labeling is going to be reporting this type of potential reaction on all 4 of these drugs. And so I think that with your dog being at high risk for ticks, consider switching over to some type of topical product. One of my favorites is the Seresto collar that lasts for 8 months, unless your dog is swimming a lot, and then it's more closer to 5 months. Appears to be very safe, not only for the dog, but also for human contact as well. The spot-on products that are labeled for your dog's particular weight range, especially products that come from your veterinarian, we have got very good safety profile with those as well. But any drug that we use has that potential for adverse reactions. And I think that your veterinarian and yourself should report your dog to the FDA, just to be another statistic.
Sure.
Whether your dog is seizuring because of the medication or just because seizures are a common problem in dogs, and it usually starts hitting when they get to be 2, 3, 4 years of age. That's when we start seeing epilepsy. It may just be coincidental, but I wouldn't take any chances, and I think having your dog on something else would be perfectly acceptable.
Yeah. Good luck, Brad. Thank you so much for calling. Aaron in Grafton, it's your turn. Thank you for waiting.
Hi. Well, this is a similar concern. I have several cats, and two of them are losing hair in the back, and my vet suggested that it was probably fleas, and so she gave me easy spots to put on them. My concern with multiple cats, will they try to, there's a couple concerns, but will they, I'm concerned that they'll lick it off each other, and of course the allergic reaction or seizures, you know, these are 12-year-old cats. And are there long-term health problems, you know, by putting these pesticides on our pets and also my health, you know,
Well, the fipronil, which is the active ingredient in the Easy Spot, so it's a similar ingredient that you would see in something like Frontline. It's just a different company that's making it since fipronil went off patent. There's many companies that now have it available for use. Again, very long track record with it. It has been used in pets since the early 90s and has a very, very long, safe track record. The big issues that we see with cats are what you brought up, that they do groom each other. And so we do recommend keeping them separate for 2, 3, 4 hours until the spot is visibly dried so they're not licking each other because there's something on their back. Also putting it on in an area where the cat can't lick itself. So up kind of at the base of the neck, kind of between the shoulder blades. I've had some cats that are Houdinis and still manage to get back there and just salivate and, you know, foam and so on. And it's just because it really tastes bad. So, but trying to be safe that way, I think, would be a good idea. Making sure that you're also using a product that is labeled for cat use. There are some products on the market that are, you know, dog products, and it says don't use on cats, but we still see people going and buying over-the-counter products and putting them on their cat. And it can be very toxic because there are certain ingredients that we can use very safely in dogs that we can't use in cats. You may want to consider with your group of cats using that particular collar that I just mentioned, the Seresto collar. I have a lot of cat owners that use that because it has reflector things on it, so it acts as a collar. You could put your cat's ID on it if they're going in and out, so that you've got some type of an ID collar on them, but it also gives you 8 months of flea and tick control. So maybe consider using something like that if you can't keep them separated.
Yeah, makes good sense. Thanks a lot for calling here and appreciate your call. Dr. Sandy Sawchuk from the University of Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine, our guest. And once again, we are joined by Jean Purcell because this is our Wisconsin Public Radio Fall membership drive. And we're here to ask you to invest a few minutes of time to support the future, your future, WPR listening. Isn't that right, Gene?
That's exactly why we're here, because it's your future listening that gives us our entire purpose. And it's your support, listener support, that makes up the single largest piece of the funding for Wisconsin Public Radio and all of the programs that you count on. And that's why it's your gift right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. That's so important.
Yeah, we have a dollar-for-dollar match in effect right now from Chuck and Claire Jackson of Handy Art in Milton. So your gift of $50, it turns into $100. Your $100 gift turns into $200. Your $1,000 gift turns into $2,000, as a matter of fact, right now, because so far we have about $1,200 brought in. So there's a lot of room for you to take advantage of this match and double your support for WPR programs. When you give, do it right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And you know, in some ways, it kind of sounds like magic. You know, you make a donation and all of a sudden it's doubled.
Yeah.
But it's not magic. We've got very generous supporters, and we hope that you'll become one of them very soon here at Wisconsin Public Radio. You know, listening back a few minutes ago, one of the things that I know I appreciate about this particular hour, we're cat owners at the Purcell household, and we have an elder cat. And we have a young cat, so we've got that dynamic going on. But, you know, as those cats age, you run into problems, you run into issues, and you spend a lot of time on the web trying to figure things out. And having this available and hearing all the other people asking questions, it really helps me put things in perspective. And I know that it works for other listeners as well, and that's why these hours are so, so critical, and why your support is so critical. And when you give at WPR.org, or at 888-202-2552. You make this hour and all of the hours that you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio possible. So pick out an amount that works for you, works for your budget, take a few minutes, and then make your pledge.
Support the programs you love right now, and also get the cool new WPR crew neck sweatshirt, which I am going to be getting.
Me
as
too.
A matter of fact, it's dark gray with WPR logo on it, printed right here in Wisconsin. So ask for the sweatshirt when your gift of $20 a month or more, or a one-time gift of $240 when you give that. You do it by going to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
I prefer more balanced conversation. That's what took me to WPR. When I got there, I found a whole host of programming that interests me. Gardening shows, home improvement shows, humor shows, word language shows, things that just grab my interest and grab my attention. It's not just one thing. We had been giving on an annual basis for years. I didn't want this to be an annual decision, and I think that's where we decided to make the change and become sustaining members. It was a statement of values as much as a statement of financial commitment. I'm Bruce from Brookfield, Wisconsin. I enjoy being a WPR sustainer, and I think you will too.
You can pledge right now at WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. Larry Mueller here with Gene Purcell. Listener support, single biggest source of funding for the WPR programs you rely on. And that's why your support during this fall membership drive is so important. Maybe your gift is $10 a month. Maybe it's $100 a month. Whatever amount you choose, that's the right amount.
And, you know, one of the big questions we get, or at least I get when I'm out and about, is what should I give?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a hard answer because it's a very personal thing. So maybe a formula might help you out a little bit. Take a look at it like this. So say you hear three things every day that you're really glad you heard on Wisconsin Public Radio. If you paid a dime, 10 cents for each one of those three things, it would work out to about $10 a month. So if that adds up for you, make a gift of $10 a month right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, I'm looking at our screen, our WPR screen, and I see Ryan from Madison says, great radio and a match on the Larry Mueller Show. Dollar for dollar match. Ryan did that. What about you? It's still in effect. There's still room for your gift to be matched. Do it right now. Give at WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552, and your support of WPR is going to go twice as far. And if you're not a sustainer, you can become one right now as well. Easy to set up, convenient, ongoing monthly donations from your bank account or credit card at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. We're taking a look at your pet's health today with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk from the University of Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine. Thanks for joining in today. We're going to go right back to our phones. Carolyn Sullivan has been waiting a bit. Carol, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Well, I have a question about a more rare illness for the doctor, and I hope she'll take time to let me ask all the questions they have. It's blastomycosis in my cat, and it has mainly to do with our treating it for the sores, the safety that we have to keep in mind as we handle this. So I hope I'll try to go as fast as I can through it. Okay?
Uh-huh.
All right. Our cat developed blasto in 2012. He's still with us. He had a had an opening from a, like a port where they'd done a transfusion on him for another illness. And they had said, well, take him out. He had been an outdoor cat, and we think we have mulch in our yard, and we think that's where it came from. We're not sure. Anyway, he developed the sores when we took him outside on a harness, one or two sores around that opening where they'd had a port to give him transfusions on his lower front left leg. And for years, it stayed like that. But here's we gave him Sporanox the first year. It worked. He relapsed the second year. It darn near killed him. So the vet said he'll die within probably a few months. That was 2014. But he didn't. All we ever see as a symptom otherwise is that his eyes get that little bit of a discharge.
Yeah.
Well,
now, as he's gotten older, though, the sores are spreading. He's 13 now, and his immune system is dropping, so we have to expect, you know, we don't know how long we'll have him. But his appetite is so good. He eats 3-4 times a day. Litter box is fine. Little trouble walking with the sores, but, you know, he tries. Here's the deal. We've been, for years now, having to clean those sores, and the thinking apparently has changed. Our local vets don't know very much about it. I've gone online and talked to a vet in Madison over the phone, but they really don't know. We're wearing gloves. We shampoo those sores every other day. If we do it every day, he kind of gets anxiety attack.
It's
a shampoo that has 2% of miconazole in it, which is the miconazole is like itraconazole, which is the one that darn near killed him.
Except it's just used topical. Yeah.
So you're worried about
yourself. Worried about is our safety, yes. And so my husband is the one that usually treats him, but sometimes I have to. We wear gloves. We're wondering now. One vet said maybe we should be wearing a mask.
Yeah.
And we just wash the sores with this shampoo, and he's real good about it. He knows we're helping him. And then we rinse it and pat it dry. And we're doing it every other day, but we think about when the sores run. You know, we have everything covered as far as furniture. You know, we keep everything clean. We don't know how safe the litter box is. When
We don't see blastomycosis in cats very often. It's more, we see it definitely more frequently in dogs. I have to question the diagnosis because if your cat has been living with this, topical treatment would not be adequate. It's a systemic disease. And I really wonder if there's something else going on with your cat and whether you should go back to square one and consider getting biopsies and cultures done of these sores to be able to determine what they are. But your question regarding safety with blasto, I'd be more concerned about your exposure to the environment outside. Exposure to the cat or to the dog that has blastomycosis is not really a health risk for people. It appears that it's more once the organism gets out into the soil and sporulates, those spores are what's in the infective stage. And so, you know, we don't isolate a blastomycosis case when it comes into the hospital. It just is with everybody else because they're not contagious to other animals, but they can, you know, it potentially reinfect the environment, meaning like out in soil and things, but not typically in homes. So I would not be that concerned about your safety. It's just the ick factor of having this cat that's got these draining sores that you've been living with now for, it sounds like, many years. And I would be thinking that your cat should not be alive at this point. And is there something else going on that is causing your cat to have something that could potentially be a problem for you? So
go back to square one.
Square one, or getting a second opinion from another veterinarian, perhaps one of, like the veterinarian that you spoke to at the vet school in Madison. That might be, it's probably one of our internists that you spoke with.
There you go. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. And Thomas in Manitowoc, it's your turn.
Yes, I wanted to know, while we are hunting with our Labradors, we have the opportunity to get them in the water a lot. Is a wet Labrador and one that washes a lot, running in and out of the water, is that more of a deterrent So wood ticks are not at all.
Not at all. Ticks love like the rain. They have no problem with the rain. And once they're feeding and they're attached, they are going to they'll stay on. If it was easy enough to just bathe your animal, we would not have the tick issues that we have. What is concerning, though, is when you have a dog that's doing a lot of swimming, what type of flea and tick control you're using, because some of them will wash off more easily. You particularly want to use something that's going to be fairly water resistant and stay on your dog. And that would be either one of the oral products, knowing with the, you know, the new FDA report of the rare cases of some neurologic complications, one of the ones that gets down into the hair follicles, like Fipronil product, Frontline, or any of the other products that have that in it. Those would be things that you may want to be looking at just to make sure that your dog is protected. But yeah, I wish it was. Wouldn't that be easy?
Wouldn't that be
just
great?
Throw a stick in the water and let your dog go for a swim, and boy, ticks are gone. No, not that easy.
They're sticky little buggers.
They are. And that's why flea and tick shampoos don't work. I mean, they don't provide any residual effect. And as soon as you rinse it off, you've lost all the chemical that's in the shampoos. So we just use flea and tick shampoo as a grooming shampoo. It really doesn't provide any insecticidal properties.
There you go. Thank you so much, Thomas, for calling. Appreciate your call. Dr. Sandy Sawchuk from the UW School of Veterinary Medicine, our guest today. Jean Purcell joins me once again to talk to listeners. That's you. You provide the single largest source of funding here at WPR. This drive is your chance to support all the programs you enjoy. So please give now at WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. And we've got a few minutes to get to that dollar-for-dollar match.
Yeah, and I have to say, we've made some pretty good progress in the last few minutes. Really good progress. We've got 25 calls in, so just 5 to go to make our goal. But we've still got some room on that dollar-for-dollar match. So if you've been waiting all hour and you think, I should pledge, I mean to pledge, and now is the time to do it. You'll double the impact of your pledge. Chuck and Claire Jackson of Handy Art in Milton will double every dollar you give. So thanks to them and thanks to you, because they've inspired you to support WPR. Make your pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And you could even think about the dollar value of Dr. Sandy Sawchuk and the great advice that she gives every single time she's on the program. She's been a regular guest for a long, long time, and I venture to say tens of thousands of dollars worth, more than tens of thousands of dollars worth of advice to you and to me, because I've gotten a lot of help from my own two cats as well, Coco and Tiger. But I think it's an example of the kind of program that you hear every day from 11 to 12:30. We are listener-supported. We bring great shows and great guests like Dr. Sandy Sawchuk. And when you give at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552, you make this hour and many more hours possible. So choose an amount that works for you. Take a couple of minutes and then make your pledge.
Absolutely. And think about the time that you've spent with Wisconsin Public Radio over the years. And maybe you've been listening for a long time. I know a lot of us, me included, started listening when my parents were listening to Wisconsin Public Radio back when they were the state stations. And since then, over the years, I have become hooked on Wisconsin Public Radio, just like you have. I know you can't get enough of the news, the in-depth conversations, the music, and the great entertainment.
And now that you're all grown up, it's your turn.
That's a subject of some debate.
I'll direct it right straight at listeners. If you're all grown up right now, it's your turn to become a member like Gene and like me and like your parents, maybe, to help pay for the hours of high-quality program you enjoy day after day, year after year. So join the WPR family. Support the radio that's been a part of your life since you can remember. Start with a gift of $10 a month, maybe, or $120 at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
There are many reasons to give to Wisconsin Public Radio. this drive. One of them is that your donation of any amount gets you entered in a drawing for a $200 gift card to a bookstore near you. You'll have 5 chances to win. You can send in a postcard with your name, address, email, and phone to WPR Bookstore Drawing, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, 53706. Sustainers, we've got you covered. You're automatically entered. We hope you'll donate to enter, but you don't have to donate to win. Here's how.
Just go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 to make your pledge. Larry Mueller here with Gene Purcell, asking for your support during our fall membership drive because, it's what makes the WPR programs you rely on possible. Maybe your gift is $10 or $20 a month. Whatever amount you choose, that's the right amount. And it's easy.
It's easy to do, and we've got that dollar-for-dollar match in effect. We've got still maybe, it looks like, a few dollars left on that. Make your call right now. Take advantage of that. And as Larry said, it's easy to do. We just need a few pieces of information. You need your name, how we get a hold of you, how much you'd like the pledge, and finally, how you'd like to pay.
Just takes a couple of minutes to make your gift to Wisconsin Public Radio, and those few minutes help fund your daily listening. So your support right now makes a big, big difference at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And some really, 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 really great news to report. It looks as though we've made 2 goals in the last few seconds. We've made our listener, our pledge goal, that number, and we have met our match. So
thanks to
everybody for making calls, making pledges online. But you know what? Let's not stop here, because some hours we make the goal, some hours we don't. So let's keep the momentum going. Give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552, and your support of WPR will go twice as far.
If you're a sustaining member making ongoing gifts, thank you so much for that. This might be the day, though, that you increase your support of WPR. A friend of mine just did that. I added $5 a month. But you could add $5 a month or $10 a month, whatever amount you choose. That's the right amount at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And we'll be back with Dr. Sandy right after this look at the news. So you just stay with us. Taking a look at your pet's health today, I'm Larry Mueller, and our guest expert, Dr. Sandy Sawchuk from the University of Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine. She comes by pretty much every month to talk with you about your pet's health, and I thank you very much for listening in today during our drive. Tara in Juneau has a question for you, Dr. Sandy, so let's go to her. Tara, thank you for calling.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. So I have a question regarding the rabies vaccination.
Yeah.
I have two small dogs, and I've researched rabies vaccinations, and I've heard that they give the same dosage to any size dog, and I've also read that dogs should only be getting it once in their life, and I was just wondering how true these statements are.
Well, if you gave it to your dog once in your dog's life, you'd be breaking the law. Sorry. Wisconsin law is that dogs need to be vaccinated by the time they're 5 months of age for rabies, a year later, and then you can vaccinate every 3 years after that. There is a really nice website, and I refer to this all the time when there's questions about rabies and kind of state laws, especially if I have people that are moving or traveling, and it's called Rabies Awareness. And if you just type in Rabies Aware or Rabies Awareness, it'll be the first website that comes up. And the first page that comes up is a map of the United States. You click on Wisconsin, and then it has all the questions and about rabies vaccinations. And I know that I have, there are some of my patients that for medical reasons, and sometimes even just the owner's wishes, instead of vaccinating, we do a blood sample called a rabies titer. And it's checking the immune status of the pet. The blood goes to the same lab that human blood goes to. So being a veterinarian, I'm vaccinated for rabies, and I have to have my titers checked every once in a while to confirm that I'm still protected. That's unfortunately, though, not legal as a in lieu of vaccinating for our pets. And so if your dog were to be overdue for rabies or to bite someone, you have to show proof of rabies inoculation. There are some communities that animal control will be a little more agreeable with allowing a dog to be titered so that they can, have the dog at home instead of having to be in a quarantine facility for if they were to bite somebody. But it's all just comes down to legalities. And you're right, when it comes to the dose of vaccine, what we need is enough immunologic agent to stimulate an immune system. And so an immune system in a Chihuahua is the same as an immune system in a Great Dane. And so we don't split doses. We want to give the dose of the rabies vaccine. What you may want to do for your small dogs, though, is separate the vaccines out. It seems that vaccine reactions, when we see them, seem to be there's a relationship between the smaller the dog and the greater the number of vaccines that are given at one sitting, the dog has a greater reaction for having allergic reactions. So when I get small breed dogs, we often separate things out so that we're just giving a single vaccine at a sitting rather than a group of them all together, just to try to cut down on the risk of having an allergic reaction. And then if we do see an allergic reaction, we know what the animal reacted to, because if they're given multiple vaccines, who knows
who the heck
what
knows.
It is.
Yeah.
Right. So go to that website. You'll see just kind of what the state law is. And I don't want you to be finding yourself in trouble and having a pet that's unvaccinated. I had a dog in the other day that can't be vaccinated, and no groomer would take the dog. It was a Maltese, to trim the dog's nails, because they're afraid that if they get bit, then that means that the dog has to go into quarantine and the owner would be upset and so on. And so there's, all these issues, too, that you would be very limited as to where you could take your dog if you don't vaccinate them.
And what's the name of the site again?
Rabies Awareness.
Rabies Awareness. Thank you, Tara, for calling. Kurt in Galesville, your turn. Hi, Kurt.
Hi there. Great show, guys. Two things, real quick. One is I found a wonderful tick removal product. It's called Tick Lasso. It's made by a Swedish company called Silva Lure. And you can buy them online. My wife and I removed 35 ticks from our two large dogs in one day.
Whoa.
It's a great tool. It's basically a little piece of fishing line that gets pushed out at the end of a pen-looking tool. And you can put it around even as small as deer tick. It'll grab a hold of them, and you can remove them safely.
That sounds absolutely amazing. No, I thank you for bringing that up, because I've not seen that particular tool. And what most people resort to is using tweezers. And the problem with that is that you're going to end up squeezing the body of the tick, and any organisms that may be in there will then be pushed into the dog. So making sure that you don't squeeze the body of the tick, I think, is really important. The tools that I've used are usually little things that have a notch cut in them that you put up against the skin and just kind of push forward with the kind of a slow, steady pressure, and you'll get the head and the whole body of the tick. The head actually gets cemented in, and so it's very common for people to not realize how much effort it takes to remove the tick, because you are going to get a little teeny bit of skin as well when you get the tick out successfully. If a head gets left in, you cause more problems trying to fish it out. Usually the body will take care of it on its own. And so I see a lot of dogs that owners have picked and prodded at these, something that's been left in, and that's ended up causing local reactions and infections. So just leave it alone.
Yeah. And you had another point you wanted to make, Kurt?
Oh, yeah. We have a rescue dog. She's, we don't really know how old she is. Very, very mixed breed. But when we got her, she was flea infested, and she had chewed half of her body fur off. And she's got a beautiful gray coat, just a really pretty dog, but she's still chewing. And we don't really think that she is flea infested.
Yeah.
We think it's either allergies or just nervousness. She is a very nervous dog. We were thinking about using CBD oil maybe to calm her down. Are there other ways that we can keep her from chewing on herself?
Yeah, what I'd be really concerned about is some type of an allergic skin condition. The most common thing that we see dogs chew on is usually their feet and their legs and so on with allergies. And the most common allergy in dogs is flea allergy dermatitis. All it takes is one flea because they get allergic to the flea saliva that the flea deposits in the dog's body when they're feeding. So making sure that your dog is on year-round flea and tick control is really important because if your dog has allergies and with the history that your dog had, having all that hair loss, I have to assume that your dog probably is very sensitive to fleas. But there could be other things in the environment that your dog is allergic to as well. So visiting with your vet to rule out secondary infections, because sometimes they cause enough self-trauma that we end up having to treat the yeast and bacterial infection. And then talking to your veterinarian about something that will help ease the level of itch. There are several drugs on the market. The one that actually my dog is on right now is an anti-itch medication called Apoquil, and it's extremely effective. It's not a steroid. It actually works on the neuroreceptors for the neurotransmitters involved with the itch. So very, very safe, very limited side effects, and effective. So good. I think there is something that you can do for your dog, but get them on flea control if you haven't already done that.
All right. Thanks, Kurt, for calling. Appreciate it. Leslie in Cottage Grove, your turn. Hi, Leslie.
Hi, thanks so much. I have a two-pronged question. We have two kittens, they're about 9 months old now, that are our beloved kittens, and they stay in the house. We have a breezeway. There's a cat, a feral cat, that's been coming around for several years, and we sponsor it, give it food and shelter, because it seems to be, you know, otherwise ignored. Fat as a basketball with legs. The two prongs of the question are, is there something that we can do? That cat is probably neutered, by the way. It has a nicked ear, and I don't know if that fatness is worms or what. Can our cats get anything through the screen as they commune with each other through the screen? And is there something that we can do to perhaps worm that cat? Is there anything we could or should be doing for that feral cat?
Yeah, well, I think the feral cat, since you are feeding it and caring for it, it's basically your cat. And so I would be recommending that you may want to consider setting up a live trap and having that cat taken in for a physical exam. Many cats that are considered feral are just unowned cats that are, you know, it can be handled at the vet clinic. And if not, they can be sedated and they can be looked at. You can hopefully get a stool sample, you know, either at the vet clinic or if it's going on your porch or out in that area, providing it with a litter box, it may be able to go there to know what to deworm the cat for. When it comes to diseases that cat can transmit, I'd be concerned about the upper respiratory conditions that can be aerosolized through the screen. Things like feline leukemia and FIV, very unlikely because they either need to be fighting or sharing litter boxes, food bowls and things. So it would be unlikely that your cats would be able to pick up something like that. But any of the diseases that are spread through aerosol droplets like rhinotracheitis, which is cat herpes, Khaleesi virus, panleukopenia, those would be things that hopefully your two indoor cats have been vaccinated for and are going to be protected against. But get that cat in to make sure that it doesn't have something else going on. But my guess is that it's probably very well fed, thanks to you, and being spayed or neutered, probably lowered its metabolism, and it doesn't have to hunt for a living, so it's just putting on a little bit of extra weight.
There you go. Well, Sandy, you mentioned vaccinations, and Todd in Delavan emailed to ask what annual vaccinations his 6-year-old cat needs. He has heard various recommendations.
Rabies is not a state law for cats, but it is a local ordinance. And so checking with your veterinarian regarding what your local ordinance is. And then obviously these upper respiratory combination vaccines are very important as well, because these are diseases that you can bring home on your shoes and your clothing if you've been in an area where other cats have been. And some of these diseases, like cat distemper, or also known as panleukopenia, can survive for months, if not up to a year, in the environment. So you may not even know that a cat has been there, and you could be bringing these particular diseases home. So it's important to keep your cat up to date on that. We usually give the upper respiratory combo vaccination to cats every 3 years, and the rabies vaccination, depending on the type of rabies that you're using, either every year or every 3 years.
So there's a couple of shots that need to be
done. I think the most important thing, though, is getting that annual physical done, because cats are masters of hiding disease, and we find things that owners had no idea their cat has: dental disease, heart problems, thyroid issues, and even things like talking about weight. If they've got a weight issue, we can help with keeping them slim and trim and coming up with weight suggestions as well.
Oh, thank you, Sandy, for that great information. Dr. Sandy Sawchuk, our guest from the University of Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine, a regular guest, and an irregular guest, only from time to time, is Gene Purcell, who is our director of Wisconsin Public Media. And he's here to help me talk with you about our Wisconsin Public Radio fall membership drive. You count on the Ideas Network for great discussions, and it's your gift, any amount that makes these great discussions possible. So listener support, the single biggest source of funding for WPR programs, and that's why your support at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552 is so important.
It is totally important, and it is critical to us here at Wisconsin Public Radio. It allows us to do everything that we do. In the last half hour, last 20 minutes actually, we've had one pledge. And you know, that's the challenge when you've got programming that's really interesting and useful and good, is that it interrupts pledge time. Well, now is the time to go to the phones and make that pledge of support. Our goal in the next couple of minutes here is 14 more pledges. So we can do it. We've done it before, and we'll do it again.
WPR is listener supported, and that means that these goals are very important. They help us stay on track to fund the programs that you count on. So I hope you'll do your part right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And you know, you might think that Wisconsin Public Radio operates largely with tax dollars. And we do get some funding from the federal government, and we also receive funding from the state, and we are grateful for both of those sources of funding. But the voluntary listener contributions that we receive here at WPR make up the single largest source of funding for WPR programs.
Your support is really vital to keeping Wisconsin Public Radio on the air. And now that you know how important your support is, make your pledge at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And if you've never given to WPR before, let me tell you, it's easy to do. And basically, here's what you can expect. It's a short process, takes just a few minutes of your day. You'll answer some very basic questions. We'll need your name, we'll need your address, we'll need the amount of your gift, and finally, we'd like to know how you'd like to pay for it.
And that's it. Make that first donation to WPR right now. You're going to feel good about it, because listener support is such a big part of what makes WPR happen. And many times, first-time donors give $10 a month or $120 a month or a year. That amount, totally up to you, though. Some give $20, some give $100 a month.
Really, that's right. And the great thing about public radio is that you get to make that decision. But think about what you get from Wisconsin Public Radio, and think about what you receive every day here at Larry's show. Here on the program, we cover topics like environmental and consumer issues, how-to topics, Wisconsin authors, Wisconsin food, of course. Wisconsin pets are in there, too.
Yep.
You get a lot of great information every single day, and it's all possible because of your financial support of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're asking you to support this program today and all of the other programs you enjoy on the Ideas Network with your pledge, your financial pledge at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And support the programs you love right now and get the cool new WPR crew neck sweatshirt that Gene and I are both getting.
Well, I tell you what, we know cool. When you think of cool, you think of me and Larry. I know that.
Well, you know, it's dark gray. Mm-hmm. That sort of matches my complexion. Oh, man, it has the WPR logo on it, and it's printed right here in Wisconsin as well. So go ahead and ask for your sweatshirt with your gift. It's $20 a month or more. Or a one-time gift of $240, just go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552.
Picture yourself in your home. You have your hands full.
I would use two forks when I ate.
I would play the guitar, play the piano.
I'd probably do more cooking.
Whether you're cooking, cleaning, exercising, working, gardening, entertaining family, friends, kids, pets, it's a lot. This fall membership drive, we have just the thing to help. You'll have five chances to win a Sonos One speaker and enjoy the one thing that's totally hands-free, listening to the WPR programs you love. Sustainers, you're automatically entered. Find all the rules and details at WPR.org/drawing. Donate any amount right now to be entered. Here's how.
Just go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 to make your donation in support of the programs you count on. Larry Mueller here with Gene Purcell, raising the money that keeps Wisconsin Public Radio and all the programs you enjoy on the air. And maybe your gift is $10 a month, maybe it's $100 a month. We appreciate and we count on your gift.
We do indeed, and we're feeling a certain sense of urgency here because we've got about 5 or so minutes left in this pledge segment, and we are looking for 12 more pledges in just the next few minutes, but we can make a significant dent in that if you'll make your gift to support the programs you enjoy and rely on every single day.
We are listener-powered here at WPR, and that means that your pledge right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552 is so important and help paying for the programs you rely on. It makes a difference.
It really does make a difference. In fact, it makes everything possible. And when you think about WPR, think about it as your daily companion, because we're with you in the morning, in the afternoon, in your commute, all over the place. And we are here 24 hours a day, at home, in the car, at the office, whether you are concentrating or relaxing.
And like a good companion, you count on us for accurate news, great music, intelligent conversation, and we in turn count on you to support what you hear. That's how Wisconsin Public Radio works, actually. So I hope you'll give right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And you know, it's absolutely true. We cannot do it without you, without your support. And as the donor to WPR, one of the great things about this whole system is you get to decide how much you would like to give. So maybe $100 or $200 a month is the right amount for you.
That might be what you spend every month on going out to dinner, doing things with friends. Those are things you enjoy and that help make life better, just like listening to WPR. The important thing is that you decide what amount is right for you, and then you make your gift at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And you know, it's listeners who make the programs here in WPR worthwhile. Listeners are the reason we exist, and they surround everything we do. Our entire vision is caught up in listeners. But listeners who take the next step and become supporting members are the people who help make the programs possible.
You get all these great shows because members, people like you who donate, kick in the largest amount of funding for WPR programs, so I hope you'll become a member right now. Help make WPR possible with your gift of $100 a month or $10 a month, any amount you choose, at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And if you have not done so already, think about becoming a sustaining member of Wisconsin Public Radio. Make an ongoing monthly gift. It's a great way to show your support for Wisconsin Public Radio.
So do it right now. Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 and make your contribution. And thank you so much for contributing and for listening.